Brian Raftery is on the phone with us, who is the host of a new podcast called Gene and Roger. Good evening, Brian. How are you?
I'm good, John. How are you?
Great. This is an awesome idea. Where'd you get it?
these were my guys growing up.
Yeah.
I mean, I still have very vivid memories of, you know, I think I had an unspoken deal with my parents that if I sat through church on Sundays, I could come home and watch my episode of Physical Neighbor for the week. And I remember sitting there and watching every Sunday afternoon, Sunday morning. And,
right. You
know, these guys taught me how to think about movies, how to talk about movies, and how to argue about movies while still keeping your friendships intact.
Well, since, of course, that all of this took place in Chicago, many of us have been around for the evolution of it from being on Channel 11 to being syndicated by Disney, which is a quantum leap. How did you put this together? How do you put a podcast together like this?
I did it as a production with The Ringer, which is this media company, and the people that I knew were big Siskel and Ebert fans. And I've been kicking around this idea for a while, but I eventually sort of brought it to them and said, hey, if we could get, you know, some of their colleagues and family members to talk to us, I do think this is not only a story of these two really great, incredibly talented TV personalities and movie critics, but also, to me, it felt like kind of a mini history of both Hollywood and of media. I mean, as you mentioned, they started out on as PBS stars, and they became syndicated TV stars. And they did this for, you know, almost 25 years, and they did it through some of the most interesting up-and-down eras in Hollywood history. And we sort of get into, you know, they sort of started their careers in that great period of the late 60s and the 70s, and then they blew up during the 80s when Hollywood was getting very blockbuster-obsessed, and then they kind of became stars again in the 90s when the indie movement kind of boom started, and they were really at the forefront of it. So to me, it's the story of Gene and Roger, but it's also the subtext is it's the story of how media has changed and how much the way they talked kind of impacted media now.
What is your background? I mean, I have it written down here, but I want to hear it from you.
Well, I've been a journalist for about 20, 25 years, and I worked at GQ and Entertainment Weekly and a bunch of magazines. But, you know, one thing that kind of binds me to these guys is that my parents were both newspaper people. So, and they're of the same generation. So I grew up, my parents were the Philadelphia Inquirer, so I grew up around guys like Gene and Roger. I mean, and men and women like Gene and Roger, very smart, very educated, and very sarcastic and funny. You know, I loved being in a newsroom when I was a kid and listening to people who were really smart but also were not arrogant about it. Also had a real approachability to them, and you felt like you could kind of walk up and start talking to them, and they would treat you as, you know, they would take you seriously. And I think Gene and Roger had that, you know, that vibe on TV.
Well, I've heard the first episode of the podcast, and it is excellent. And I'm impressed I'm impressed with the fact that you were able to get access to people like Quentin Tarantino. That's not an easy thing to do.
Yeah, I mean, we were lucky. We got a lot of great filmmakers. I mean, we sort of knew we wanted to talk to filmmakers whose careers were impacted by them. So we have Quentin, and we also have Justin Lin, who just directed the latest Fast and Furious movie. He kind of shows up in later episodes. And Carl Franklin, who's a fantastic filmmaker who's done a lot of great noir films, who Gene and Roger really loved. And I was really grateful that both Chaz Ebert and Marlene Iglesen, who are, you know, Roger and Gene's widows, agreed to talk to me for this. And that really kind of made the whole thing possible, because they were very generous with their time and with their memories, and they helped, you know, open the doors for a lot of other people to talk to me as well. So there's a lot of, you know, it's a combination of friends and family and colleagues and filmmakers. And I'm hoping, and it's as close as you can tell to the story of Gene and Roger, I hope, without Gene and Roger themselves, obviously.
Right. It's 8 episodes.
Yes.
What have you learned from doing the podcast? What have you learned about Gene and Roger that you didn't know before? Some new revelation that came from doing the interviewing and making the podcast?
Well, you know, it's funny. I really realized that I didn't know a whole lot about Gene in general, just because he was, you know, he tended to be more private. And Roger, there's a great Steve James documentary, Life Itself, which is an adaptation of Roger's, you know, equally great memoir. And to me, I think it was learning about, you know, about Gene and kind of the fact that he was an Ivy League guy. One of my favorite things is that apparently he went to Yale.
Yeah.
He was a philosophy major, but he would also do a thing where he would dress up as Batman and jump out of trees to kind of like goof around with his friends. And I sort of loved learning as much as I could about Gene's life, because even when I was, you know, even when I got older and was reading about them, I knew less about him. And I think, you know, understanding who these two guys are, they were very, very different. Obviously, that's why they worked on TV. But I think the more you get into deep into the biographies, the more you kind of realize how much movies formed their views of the world. And the movies they loved tell you a lot about them. I mean, you know, we have a really great interview that Gene's doing with John Travolta, where he tells John Travolta what Saturday Night Fever means to him. And it's very personal. And I talked to Chaz Ebert about 2001 A Space Odyssey, which was which I didn't realize how deeply personal that was to Roger. And that's one thing that I love, is sort of looking at the movies they loved and trying to figure out what it told you about the two men who were talking about them on TV.
Did you get to the part where Gene Siskel has John Travolta's white suit from Saturday Night Fever?
He outbid Jane Fonda, and he got it for in the low thousands, which is really a steal. I mean, it's funny, because when I talked to Marlene, I mean, they watched that movie, I think, on their honeymoon. But I know what that's like. I know what it's like to have a movie that, when you're young, it just teleports you in those into a different world, and those movies stay with you. And for Gene, it really was Saturday Night Fever, which, by the way, is a movie that I also truly love. And I also love 2001 A Space Odyssey. So two of their favorite movies are also two of my favorite movies.
Now, if I remember the story correctly, and that's always a question, I believe eventually Gene sold that Saturday Night Fever outfit for like $20,000 and said that it put his kid through college. Did you hear anything?
I think he made that joke on Letterman. Yeah, I think he definitely, I can't remember what the exact figure was.
Yeah.
He made a good profit off that.
Right.
But yes, it was he did joke on Letterman that it was for his kid's scholarship fund. You know, and it's, who knows who has that now and how valuable it is, but I do love that he on to it for so long. I mean, because I get it. You fall for a character, you know, you want a little piece of it. And I think that was, it's very telling that Gene, it says a lot about Gene, and not only did he love the movie, but also Gene being so competitive had to outbid even Jane Fonda for that suit.
Competitive is an understatement. even over the years we'll get to more of that. We're going to take a break in a minute. But one of the fascinating things I didn't know about Gene and Roger that is in your initial episode of the podcast is the pilot that they filmed for Channel 11, and no one liked it because they didn't have any chemistry. And to me, they were like loaded with chemistry. I mean, if they didn't have chemistry, Siskel and Ebert would never have gone anywhere. As far as popularity.
It took a long time, and they had a really great producer, Thea Flom, who was a creator of the show. And she's the one who really kind of coaxed the personalities that we see now, or that we think of now, out of them. But, you know, TV was not a natural transition at that point for newspaper writers.
Right. I mean, absolutely.
And these were two guys who did not get along super well, barely even knew each other, really. And they were supposed to sit there and talk about Taxi Driver and make it sound exciting. And it doesn't work in those early episodes, but you can really see the evolution later on. I mean, it's all chemistry within a few years, as you pointed out.
And they had a natural rivalry because one worked for the Tribune and one worked for the Sun-Times. And those two newspapers were competitors just right out of the box, so obviously two reporters on the same beat, if you will, had a naturally built-in competitive nature. But wow, did they take it to an extreme. And we'll do more about that when we come back on 720 WGN.
I hated this movie. That's a statement I made many times while leaving the screening room, and now here are some of the affronts to my taste, my intelligence, and my patience that inspired my revenge and some hate-filled reviews.
Roger, never hesitant to let anyone know his opinion. So, Brian, how long did it take you to put together the entire, 8 episodes of this Siskel and Gene and Roger podcast?
It was a year, which sounds really impressive, but it was it was during the COVID year. So,
of course,
and I had two young kids at home, and I was doing school, and there would be these long pauses while we were trying to figure out what was going on in the world. But that wound up being really good for me because I spent at least 3 months doing nothing but watching. I mean, I don't even know how many hours of not just sneak previews, but also, you know, Gene and Roger, for people who are younger who don't realize, these guys were superstars, and they were on Letterman, they were on The Tonight Show, and there's hours upon hours. I mean, they did, I don't even know how many Howard Stern appearances, and there's lots of great local Chicago TV they did, a lot of which is online. So I had kind of these extra 3 months to research, which wound up being really helpful because by the time I was writing the scripts and interviewing, Gene and Roger's family and friends and coworkers, I had a lot. I mean, I had a little bit too much knowledge of how they voted on certain movies, on certain arguments, and so it really helped. But it takes a while to get these things going, and you know, you go from recording. We were sort of also hoping that I wound up being able to record these in a real studio instead of just sitting in my closet doing voiceover.
Yeah, exactly.
Better than they did 6 months ago. Yeah.
I can understand that. And you know, I watched all those shows too, and I knew Gene and Roger. I didn't know Gene as well as I got to know Roger. I would actually say that we were friends.
Yeah.
And I didn't really care what movie it was. You know what I mean? I just wanted to see them go at each other because that was the essence of what that show was about. I mean, as you point out in the podcast, this set the stage for every ESPN or whatever they call arguing sports show or whatever, you know, it could have been about anything. In this particular case, it happened to be about films. But the competitive nature, I got to tell you this story, the competitive nature. So Gene Siskel has passed away. And on State Street, the Gene Siskel Film Center was opened. Then a few years later, Roger is going to get a inlaid plaque, for lack of a better term, in the pavement outside of the, what is it now? I can't remember the name of the theater. Is it the State? It's the State Theater, I think, or the Michigan Theater, whatever it is, that's right across the street from the Chicago Theater. That's it. Right across the street from the Gene Siskel Film Center. So I'm there, and there's a ceremony, and, you know, Roger's there, and Chaz is there, and they're doing the whole thing. And Marlene, Gene's widow, is there. And I said, we were talking, and, you know, this is really nice. And she goes, I want to tell you something. What? Gene's in heaven going, I got the State Street first. I mean,
that's why we love them. I mean, that's why I mean, when I started watching, I was really young when I started watching, and I did love the arguments. It's kind of what I tuned in for. Also, they showed scenes from R-rated movies I wasn't allowed to see. That was also a big draw. But, going back and rewatching all these old reviews they did, there's also so much. I mean, first of all, they agree more than we all remember. I mean, they definitely did not fight five times an episode.
Right.
But when they agree on a movie, whether they love it or they hate it, when they come back from a movie and they really love it or they really hate it, those are actually now the reviews I enjoy the most, because it's so, you know, it's just so much joyous. It's so joyous to watch them really dig into a movie that they love, or to really dissect a movie they absolutely hated. And when they're, and even when they're agreeing, they're kind of disagreeing sometimes, which is also great. I love that the tension that's always so built in. There was never anyone else like it. And as you said, it's spread out throughout so much of TV now, and through everything, through podcasts. I mean, it's sort of the de facto mode of two person conversation now, is to make sure some of that conversation is an argument.
Exactly. And both of them were extremely intelligent people that, you know, their knowledge and their abilities were certainly not confined only to cinema and film. As I said earlier, I didn't know Gene as well as I knew Roger. I thought Roger was one of the most intelligent people I'd ever met in my life. He could expound on just about anything. And could also tell a good yarn.
He was
a great storyteller and just a generally delightful person to be around. And over the years, you could tell that this competition between the two of them mellowed to a certain extent, and and they did become friends. There's just no question about it. And And Roger told me once that the best advice he ever got about at the movies or their TV show was from Oprah Winfrey, and she told him syndication. It was one word, and that was an explosion after that show, which had started out at Channel 11 as this local program with no history, suddenly went into this gigantic syndication. And Roger told me that when he got the first paycheck, he almost fainted because it was so unbelievably gigantic. And that's the way that they went for a while. I mean, that's the way it went. And I think, were they originally syndicated by Disney, or did that come later?
No, they were from Tribune. They were in Tribune, and then they were their first. The Tribune was the first syndicator, and then it was Disney. And it was a huge leap, because when they went from PBS to Tribune, it was, you know, when I talked to people about it, it was considered almost a betrayal. It's like, how dare you leave PBS? We've got the tote bags. We've been called, you know. It was almost seen as kind of selling out, which would seem insane to anyone younger nowadays to even think of that term. But it was a huge risk, because they had a safety on PBS, and if they went to syndication, they could have been canceled within 3 or 4 months if their numbers weren't good. But they were in really, really popular in syndication, and that's when it really blew up. And that's, again, like, as I said earlier, this to me is so much of it as a media history story. Not in a dry way, but it's really kind of fun to track how all these evolutions came, and how we consume information on
Absolutely.
Gene and Roger's watch. And obviously, you know, and no one took to the internet quicker than Roger Ebert. I mean, he was one of the first people I know who had an email address. I think I emailed him in the 90s at one point.
Right. What was that first email? I lived around the corner from him. What was that I can't remember the initial.
Yeah, CompuServe, I know for
a while.
When I was emailing him a couple of times in the early aughts, he was still CompuServe.
These alleys would run in Chicago, alleys behind everybody's house. He had, I don't know how many gigantic cables coming into the back of his house. This was all for, as far as I knew at that time, internet. And he was way out in front of anybody using the internet. Hey, did you ever get to, in your episodes, anything about the infamous movie that Roger wrote?
We talk about Beyond the Valley of the Dolls a little bit. It's something I would have liked to have gone into more details with. I rewatched it while working on this, and I still love that. It's a great movie. It's insane. It's the kind of movie that if you play it for anyone under 25 now, they would probably have you arrested.
Yes, that's right.
It's so out there. But, you know, it was a movie that, we talk about the fact that one of the critics who really hated it was a young critic named Gene Siskel.
Right.
And I know a friend of mine worked at Entertainment Weekly in the 90s and actually hired Gene to do a quick review of it again when it came out on, I think it was finally out on VHS. And I think the idea was, well, maybe Gene will look at it with different eyes now. And it was like, nope, Gene still hated it 30 years later or whatever.
Well, I got to say, it was a rather odd pairing. at least I thought so anyway. Beyond the Valley of the Dolls. Where is your podcast available? How many different services are carrying it?
It's on Apple. It's on Spotify. It should be, you know, wherever you get podcasts. It's called Gene and Roger, and it's running as part of a much bigger movie podcast called The Big Picture. So it's kind of in the feed. But if you look around, if you just put in Gene and Roger, you'll be able to find it. But it is, you can follow along and listen to it pretty much wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, we just have a couple of minutes left, but talking about their influence and how the film community sat with bated breath to find out if they got thumbs up or thumbs down.
Yeah.
And I don't know what I can't remember the exact details, but I was briefly working as a wannabe film critic, actually for Channel 11, and there was some sort of junket in town with, and I can't remember the film. I wish I could. And the director and representatives from the studios were there, and somehow, I guess a PR person forgot to kick me out of the room. And they got a call, and the guy, he picks up the phone and goes, "Yeah? Yeah? Really? Great." And he turns to his person and goes, "They gave it two thumbs up." I mean, it was just like, "We're home. It's going to be good. Everything's okay. We got a thumbs up." And I just love those guys, and I can tell that you did too. Thanks so much for being with us, and I'm looking forward to listening to the rest of those episodes of the podcast. Thanks so much for being with us, Brian.
Thanks so much, John. It was a real pleasure. I really appreciate it.
Sure. The news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.